It's time. Let's go. Yeah. Hey, yo, wake up there. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Unbought and Unbossed, Canadian political news and views. This is show number 130. Today is July 15th, 2009. Unbought and Unbossed is an independent voice dedicated to presenting and discussing the political and social issues most relevant to Canadian citizens. This show contends that 9/11 is Canada's single most important issue because the self-inflicted attacks of 9/11 are being used as the justification for the current overthrow of our democratic and sovereign nationhood, turning Canada into a corporate-driven plutocracy. The official story of the 9/11 terror attacks and the ensuing war of terror are deeply troubling and are at the forefront of this radio program. I strongly encourage listeners to question what you think you know about today's world events and to analyze the motives behind our traditional news sources. Each week, new segments of Unbought and Unbossed offer further evidence for these incredible claims, which are either omitted or distorted by the mainstream corporate media. Turn your televisions off. You are being lied to and conditioned to accept this madness as our inevitable future. We must work to return the future of the human race to its rightful owners. That's you. Our ignore it and maybe it will go away on its own mentality is killing us. It has to end now. It is high time to wake up and to educate, to learn to work together, and to find the courage to act on our love for one another. Our every freedom is at stake in this battle for truth and accountability. The prize is nothing less than the health of our collective human soul. The revolution has begun. I suggest you find your role. Friends, welcome back. I wasn't in last week. I was camping. I got family in town. That's the summer, and that's a good thing. I got Pappy here with me. He's not in the studio right now. He's kind of hiding in the other room over there. You're shaking shit. Oh, there you are. You hear that? Huh? You'd be able to come back with something if you were in here. All right. Okay, what do I got for you tonight? First off, I have an in-studio interview with Kevin Annett and Lori O'Rourke, co-producers of the documentary film Unrepentant, Kevin Annett and Canada's Genocide. Kevin and Lori are currently working on a new film project concerning the worst crime in Canadian history, the deliberate and systematic ethnic cleansing and mass killing of Canada's First Nations peoples. Also, Kevin recently wrote an article entitled, Where, Oh Where Have the Progressives All Gone? A Lament for a Lost Generation. This piece addresses his frustration with the so-called lefty progressives who refuse to support holding the church and state accountable for the crimes of genocide. And guess what? I have the same frustration with these phony progressives concerning their silence over the false flag attack of 9/11. Kevin Annett has a radio show at CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, 102.7, Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. And Lori O'Rourke is co-host of the Alter Egos radio show here on CHLY. That is Saturday between 10 a.m. and noon. Before I move on telling you more, I want to read a quick quote from Kevin's piece here. Oh, it really is warm in here, folks. Okay, so I'm quoting this, where, oh, where have the progressives left gone, the progressives all gone? So here we are quoting a little, it's a long piece, it's about six pages. So I'm starting in a bit. It says, how magnificently ironic that some radicals, who for so long have decried church and state, they have refused to publicize the very proof of what they have alleged so abstractly, that our society is murderous, that church, state, and corporations are a blood-soaked triangle that built Canada on ethnic cleansing and mass killing, and that this slaughter continues. When have lefties or leftists ever been handed such a thorough validation of their beliefs that our society was born in blood and is maintained by oppression and lies? And yet to the Canadian left, if one can judge by their actions and attitudes, genocide never happened in Canada. Strong words, and I'll put his feet in the fire. Why don't you guys say hello? Welcome, Lori O'Rourke.
Hello there.
Hi, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
And likewise, Kevin. Thank you. All right. So that will be taking place in about 5 minutes or so. So what else do I have for you tonight? I know. A lot of you people are probably tuning in to hear the Jonathan Kay interview. Jonathan is an author, or a journalist, I should say, with... So he's a fiction writer. Jonathan Kay is with the National Post. And a couple months back, he wrote, a rather fair piece. The title is An Evening in Montreal with Richard Gage, 9/11 Truth Movement Prophet Extraordinaire. That was April 23, 2309. Kevin was to be a guest tonight, but he canceled. However, he agreed to be on next week's show. This article that I will be reading from later is one of the most fair articles to come from the corporate media. Kay is currently writing a book about the truth movement, not necessarily about what we're bringing to the table, but just the wackos like you and I. Also, this will be a historic first on this show. It'll be the first time anyone has come on to defend the official story. So that'll be exciting. And to have a little bit of fun with that, Doug sent me a piece which he found on YouTube, put out by Steeper33, and it's called 9/11 Debunking for Dummies. And basically, it's how to deal with those pesky 9/11 truthers who just won't go away. Okay. Also, we're going to talk a little bit about, I'm not going to talk about it, I'm going to play some audio clips. This one comes to us from the National Vaccine Information Center. It was put out by the spokeswoman, June 17th, 09. I got this from BrassCheckTV.com. It's a good place to go if you don't know about it. So what it has to say is that terror threats and pandemics are being given the same weight legally, and that government has granted itself new powers to deal with them. So what this could mean is that, maybe you're going to see key members of the 9/11 truth movement being forced into quarantine because allegedly they have a virus. Yes, indeed. If you have a virus, you're on the same grounds as if you're a terrorist. They're going to black bag you, I guess. Okay, and I'm going to be doing a little bit more reading later in the second hour from one of my favorite authors, Jim Mars. This is from his book, Rule by Secrecy, The Hidden History That Connects the Trilateral Commission, the Freemasons, and the Great Pyramids. This was published by HarperCollins in 2000. I've got a recent edition, the 28th. This thing is a big seller. So I'm going to be looking at his concluding comments to this book, which includes, believe it or not, reasons to be optimistic. Very nice for that, eh? Okay, one more piece before I move on. Again, talking about this avian flu, this false flag flu is what my buddy Wayne is calling it. And I've got an audio clip here. Now, this Jane Burgermeister, I brought her up yesterday. She's an Austrian investigative journalist. And the reports that her and the, I guess, whistleblowing scientists, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages. And this chap in Australia, a vlogger who didn't give his name, he has done a really good job of condensing that information. So it's a longer piece. It's about 20 minutes long. Now, let me give you a brief piece here on what's going on with Jane Burgermeister. She's an Austrian investigative journalist, and she is warning the world that the greatest crime in the history of humanity is underway. On June 10th, she filed criminal charges with the FBI against the World Health Organization, the United Nations, and the President of the U.S., in particular, the U.N. System Coordinator for Influenza, the Director General of the World Health Organization, the Secretary of Department of Health and Human Services, the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, and several of the highest-ranking government and corporate officials concerning bioterrorism and attempts to commit mass murder. Also, she has prepared an injunction against forced vaccinations, which will be filed in America. These actions follow her charges filed in April against Baxter AG and Aver Green Hills Biotechnology of Austria for producing contaminated bird flu vaccine, alleging that this is a deliberate act to cause and profit from a pandemic. There will be more on next week's show concerning this false flag flu. My buddy Wayne Pronte is pretty busy with this bird flu situation, so we're going to hear more about that as well tonight a little bit. Kevin, please do jump in.
Just, while we're on that, I just want to make a short little point about how that applies to Canada.
Okay, please do.
The flu vaccine in Canada is produced by this company, GlaxoSmithKline, and out of a factory in Saint-Foy, Quebec. And they're responsible for producing these millions of vaccines that are going to be forced, particularly on school kids, in September and October. And the government somehow has estimated that 30% of Canadians are going to come down with this unknown pandemic, if somehow they figure that out. Hmm. But GlaxoSmithKline, that's producing the vaccine, was charged in a French court and convicted for their hepatitis B vaccine a few years ago caused multiple sclerosis in French people. And they had to compensate a number of people who had suffered from MS because of the vaccines. Secondly, the same company that's going to be shoving vaccines in your children's arms was that out of 1,500 companies, they were labeled the third worst offender in terms of carcinogenic polluters in Britain. They were dumping wholesale toxic chemicals into rivers in England, and especially carcinogens, and they're never held accountable for it. So if a company has that kind of disregard for the environment and for people, they're the ones responsible for the flu vaccine here in Canada.
Yeah.
That's reason enough not to agree to these vaccines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that company is one of the biggest international pharmaceutical companies, and yep. Yeah, they've got a pretty bad name.
Yep.
Mm. Oh, okay, very good. So, we got 8:15 right now. I was going to play a short track by Jordan Maxwell, but I guess we're going to skip that. I got to hit the weather update right now, so we're going to do that real quick, and then we'll get into our conversation with Kevin Annett and Laurie O'Rourke. So let's put some weather music on, shall we? Yippee! It is summer. That's right. I think that does it. I've thanked the people that are financial supporters of this independent radio station, and good for them, because we would not be on the air without other people supporting us. That's just as simple as that. We get some money in from the college, but not nearly enough to stay on the air. So if you're a listener, please become a member. If you got money, drop it down here. We could use some big purchases. And there's my sales pitch for CHLY. Okay, let's turn the little piggies down, and let's move on into a discussion with our guests here today. There's a couple things going on with Kevin and Lori. They have a film project that they're working on. I don't believe it is necessarily a follow-up to Unrepentant, which was a huge smash. I highly recommend that everyone check that out on YouTube. Likewise, you can visit hiddenfromhistory.org. Okay, .org. So there we are. Welcome back to the show. You guys are fairly regular, Kevin Annett and Lori O'Rourke. Thank you.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah. Right. So can we start talking about this new film project? How far into it are you? What is it about? And let's hear about it.
Well, it's called The Diary, and it's a script we wrote over the last half year or so. It's a feature film, and it's really a story about a white minister working on Vancouver Island, loosely based on my character, who is given a diary of a little girl, Indian girl, who recorded what went on in the local United Church Residential School where she was incarcerated and where she died. And the minister is inspired by this diary to, you know, confront what happened. He faces a lot of persecution and that. But the story gradually comes out. And it was really exciting to film, not only because I've never had the experience of working with an actual film crew and doing the story, and to see a lot of my own story kind of come to life, just very exciting. But also a very kind of groundbreaking type of film, because it's never been done before in Canada, just like our documentary.
Very nice. Laurie, did you want to add something to that? How is it different, for example, doing the, I guess, full-on documentary style versus this right here?
Well, you know, to dramatize a story and, you know, you get the facts across in a fictionalized way. I mean, there's truth in fiction, you know, so it's just a matter of presenting the story in a way that, you know, it flows as a story and whatnot. And, I mean, hiring actors and going over a script that's rehearsed and that sort of thing is very different from the documentary process, which was people just speaking ad lib, really, and, and just saying what actually happened to them, right?
Now, is there a diary, has that been made up to tell the story?
It's, you know, there have been accounts over the years of people who've shown me stuff and that. There wasn't an actual diary, although, you know, in terms of what I've seen, but there were accounts, for example, when the first lawsuit started here in Nanaimo in 98, they kept making reference to these journals that the church had kept, records of punishment inflicted on children and things like that. So it's accurate to say that, you know, definitely there were records kept of these things. We think that by personalizing it and making it a child's journal, it's kind of like the Anne Frank story.
Yeah, I was going to be bringing that up, yeah.
Very much, very analogous to that. And since Holocaust denial is a big issue in Canada over this genocide, we think it's especially important to let people see it through the eyes of a child, but also a fairly establishment, you know, clergyman who had his whole world destroyed because he was willing to go deeper in this stuff.
Okay. Now, is the young girl a character in this, or is it just based on her writing found later type thing?
It's based on her writing found later, or handed over later, and so as he's reading it, you know, we get flashbacks and we get to see things that happened and various true stories that have been told over the years, all kind of condensed into this one person's experience. But there are all of the flashbacks are things that have, you know, had happened.
Okay. Her name is Raven in the film, and the neat thing about the film, though, it doesn't confine itself to the issue of the residential schools, because this minister, because he was inspired to look deeper, he also found out that his church had been selling off native land to logging companies, which is, in fact, the issue that got me fired at St. Andrew's Church in Port Alberni. You know, for example, we had fun creating these imaginary scenes in the corporate boardrooms of these guys saying, like, who wrote this letter? Who is this asshole? Get rid of him, you know? Like,
nice.
You can't do that in a documentary, but you can create imaginary scenarios that we know happen, but it's neat to put the villains on screen like that, you know?
No kidding. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about conspiracy theory being transformed.
It's not
almost,
theory,
you know?
At all. It's a reality.
Well,
yeah,
it's just, I mean, how it actually happens, right? Meetings happen, and some things are told, and some people aren't told, right? So,
nice. So how far along are we?
Well, the shooting was done by the end of June, and need to work with a whole bunch of actors, you know, all island actors and extras and whatnot. So,
okay.
And all shot in location, basically around Duncan, mostly.
We're editing now. It's in the editing stage, and I'm according to plan, it would be we're looking for a distributor and a release in the fall.
Nice. Any funding from Arts Canada type deals?
No. We don't take government funding for obvious reasons.
Okay.
You know, this is like with Underpendant. This is a grassroots kind of
effort.
Project.
Yeah.
Okay.
Effort.
Okay. I know that another local documentarian, Paul Manley, puts out a movie every year type thing, and I know that he's solicited you know, friends and family and you know, loved ones in Nanaimo to offer money to help with production. Is that something you're going to be doing, or is it needed?
I don't know. I mean, this is something we're working with Louis Lawless, who is the director of Unrepentant as well, in Duncan.
Okay.
And, you know, to me, it is not a matter, like people often when they start a project says, well, we've got to get all the funding in place first. I think it's the other way around. You've got to create something new and original, and then the funding will come. I mean, once it gets out there, that's what we found with Unrepentant. You get out through the Internet, the response was unbelievable because it was hitting a chord, and I think eventually that's the way you'll get the
the support to get it distributed widely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are either of you, do you have cameos, or are you in front of the camera as well?
Yeah. I just kind of play a church lawyer.
She's a church lawyer.
Okay.
And I was one of the church, at one point I was a church official saying, get rid of the guy, you know. What are we tolerating this jerk for, you know? So it's nice to play a villain.
Yeah. Well, you're being painted as one, so there you go.
Yeah.
All right. Let me see, do I have any other questions about this film? Any of the actors, are they young aspiring professionals, or did you pull them off the streets, or how did you choose?
A bit of all of the above, kind of, yeah, definitely.
A lot of talent. Young, tend to be young actors in their 20s, 30s. But we used a lot of...
And some older actors, too.
The native people that are involved. We got some friends and family. Joe Thorne, he's a city councillor in Duncan. And he recruited all his family and relatives to come out and take part. There was a scene, for example, where we reenacted something that was told to me. Actually, the first story ever told about the murder of a kid in a residential school, where a little girl, Maisie Shaw, was kicked down a flight of stairs by a United Church minister in Port Alberni, 1946. And we reenacted that. We showed a little kid being thrown down a stair. And actually, when we filmed it, I was the person who had to catch the kid, right? I was kind of at the bottom of the stairs.
The stunt work.
They literally threw the kid through the air, and I caught him. But this was all just local talent.
Okay.
You know, people who helped out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, this local talent, I'm going to guess that they were learning things about their kind of immediate history. Were there times when it was very emotional? I would assume so, you know, talking about such a painful subject that, you know, is not... past history,
time and again people came to us and said, you know, I've seen your film, I didn't believe that this could happen in my country, and I didn't know about this history. So that made them all the more inspired to work on the film, I think. They were it was a very motivated crew and cast.
Yeah, and a lot of people were, you know, giving, you know, above and beyond, and, you know, just giving, right, just giving to the project, so.
Nice. Are you hoping to get it shown in smaller... What's the term I'm looking for? The film festivals.
We're going to the top. We want to get this.
You don't want the smaller one.
We want to do everything.
We're going to Cannes.
We're going to Cannes. We're going to the Academy Awards. This is going to go to the top, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, good. I hope it does. There's many of them. They're bouncing. You know, it seems like every small town now has a film fest going on.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there's a lot of film happening. There really is. I mean, you know, the technology, as you well know, it's really put into people's hands, which is very exciting, right?
Mm. Neat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The camera is such an important tool right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, speaking from the 9/11 truth, you know, and YouTube, they just went together so well, and I'm happy that you. Two as well are using film, you know, because a lot of people are visual learners, and that works very well for them.
I also want to put a plug in for the 9/11 Truth people in Calgary, in Edmonton, and in Ottawa, because in both places it was the 9/11 Truthers who sponsored the meetings where I came and showed Unrepentant, and recently had some really good gatherings there. So, you know, just acknowledge those links.
Nice. Yeah, very nice. Well, that might be a good segue into talking some of the. Or are we finished talking about the film?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. That was concerning this article, this recent article. I don't have a date on it. I'm guessing it's this week. The where have the progressives all gone? And I read a short clip on that, and it was to show, you know, how similar these struggles are to get truth out, you know, kind of regardless of their color and stripes. And I agree with you wholeheartedly that... Where are the people that care?
Yeah.
You know, why does it have to? I don't know. It's a very frustrating, and you know, likewise, it's clearly frustrating for you as well. And you're writing about it, and that's a good thing. Do you want to tell us a little bit more?
Well,
I've
been wanting to write this for a number of years because, you know, when 12 years ago, when this whole struggle started for me, I assumed that people on the left would be the first to come forward to support it. And they've been the last. As a matter of fact, kind of in the mainstream left, the consensus seems to be don't touch this issue or this person with a barge pole. And to me, I couldn't figure out why, but we had that interesting experience in Ottawa when we met Gene Crowder, the local member of parliament.
Okay, yeah.
NDP, and that was very instructive for me, how the NDP refused at the time to support a motion in parliament to investigate the missing children from the residential schools. 3 months later, the Tories... bring up the issue in Parliament after another member of Parliament raised it, a Liberal guy called Gary Morasty. But it was ironic that it was the right wing and not the left in Canada that went after this issue of genocide.
Right.
Well,
right.
We'll say that Gary Morasty is native, that it was good finally Sunday somebody stood up. Yeah, well, I know, there's natives and there's natives, but it was amazing. I mean, you should go look up the archives of him bringing that up. It was more than one day. I mean, he was asking for repatriation of the bodies, a forensic investigation, proper burial, the full thing, right? And then, and in him saying that, the reply from Jim Prentice, who was minister, his response was, "Well, I think the speaker goes too far. I mean, it's too far to ask for proper burial for children. You know, it's incredible." And he was quickly shot out of politics. He just sort of announced a quick retirement about a month or two later, and we've never seen or heard from him since.
Well, he's working for a big uranium company in Saskatchewan.
Well, they buried him too, though, because I mean, I couldn't find him on the website.
He was hired as the public relations guy for Cameco, which is one of the biggest uranium companies in the world. Ties with the Liberal Party through Anne McClellan, who's former Justice Minister. But it was interesting, not only how he was taken out of the picture, but Jim Prentice was given another portfolio. The reporter for the Ottawa Star who raised this issue, Jorge Barrera, lost his job.
No kidding.
Anyone who was really out there publicly talking in that time, which was spring of 2007, anyone who was going further than kind of like just expressing sorrow about this and asking, well, where are they buried? How did they die? Who's responsible? As I found, like with our work, you raise those issues and you're beyond the pale all of a sudden and nobody will talk to you anymore.
Now, the title of this piece is Where Have They All Gone? So that must mean that the progressives were a strong force at one time. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, I think relative to now, definitely. I mean, I remember when I came of age politically in the 70s, there was that whole, not only from, the 60s was kind of portrayed as a flower child generation by the media, but it was a lot more than that, and I think it was trivialized by the media for that reason.
Yes,
I mean,
of course.
You know, the 60s was asking, the movements that were asking fundamental questions of power and who runs North America, and the people willing to do that and who had the base in the labor movement and other, you know, real mass movements of people, though those people are pretty much gone now. I mean, you don't find, now and then you'll see a veteran of that time, but the lessons accumulated during that time have been lost, and I see progressive movements now repeating the same mistakes over and over and over because they've lost ties with that, those earlier generations. And maybe that's one of the reasons why they're not taking up this issue, I don't know.
Well, there was another interesting, I mean, someone responded on one of the discussions going on online about, you know, he's an old guy, I don't know, expressing similar thing, and he took a further line that, you know, back around World War One and the Depression and all that, that, I mean, there was a mass mobilization of people who had nothing to lose and everything to gain by actually fighting, whereas right now we're all totally numbed out and way too comfortable that, you know, who's going to risk all of this to, you know, to get, you know, we're not sure of a result, so we might as well just sit back and stay comfy, right?
Yeah, it seems so often that people can say, you know, I know it's messed up, but what can I do?
Yeah.
You know, it's bigger than me.
Mm.
And, well, yeah, it is, but it's not bigger than all of us.
Yeah, certainly not.
This piece I'm going to be reading from Jim Mars, he says that the secret we have going for us is that there's 99 of us in one of them.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have to play ball. And
once we're aware, once we're armed with the knowledge. And that's the hard part, because it's getting the evidence and the knowledge to people. And in one sense, it's easier to do now because of the technology, but there's such an information overload that people don't know what to do with the truth when you're given it. Like, we hold protests outside churches regularly. And when you're out there talking to people, I mean, you know, we're outside the United Church in Vancouver a few weeks ago in response to this murder that happened of a little girl in an Alberta residential school, trying to get the church to take responsibility for this little girl, Vicky Stewart, who was beaten to death with a 2x4, basically. The church just washes its hands, like they do with the thousands of other kids that died. But when you're talking there to the people going into the church and the people walking along the street, they're all basically saying, well, I didn't know any of this. I mean, where's the information about it? The media doesn't report it. It was only through the Internet and shows like yours that we get this stuff out. So there's a great power when you connect people with the truth of it, but that's, you know, there's real problems now.
The province did pick up that story for a couple of days and then dropped it. But it gets in there, like, you know, there's those little pockets and windows where you can slip in with a story. But
okay. Do you ever have any luck getting any of your editorials published in local papers?
Ordinarily. I send them out quite widely. And the Ottawa Citizen did one of mine once, the Victoria Times columnist. But you mostly see them on the Internet and alternative publications.
Okay. One of the things that you mentioned is the odd reaction from the left, and what that reaction is that there isn't one. It's absent.
Mm-hmm.
And, I hear you. You know, sometimes I get frustrated, and on air, I don't mention shows, but I say, how can you talk politics and not talk about 9/11? You know, really. You know, it's the basis of everything that's going on right now, and are you doing your job, or are you not? You know, and I'm pulling my hair out here, guys, and... Come on, let's agree on something,
mm-hmm.
you know, that, anyway, so, I don't know exactly.
Well, you know, the non-reaction is very interesting because it's striking very close to home when you're telling people to look at all of the sacred cows you were raised with, including the NDP, including the United Church, who are very closely linked mm-hmm. as institutions, and say, no, they plan genocide, they're responsible, they're all part of it. They kind of anecdote I share in the article about that is a number of years ago, about 10 years ago now, I went to the editor of the Communist Party newspaper in BC, and you'd figure these guys, you know, quote, radical officially, that they'll report all this stuff. I showed them the documents indicating the 50% death rate in the residential schools, which now even the Globe and Mail has acknowledged. And he shook his head, and he said, I can't believe the church would do that. My own wife is a member of the United Church.
Mm.
As if that somehow kind of
absolves...
Therefore what?
Yeah.
Kind of the assimilation of the left into the mainstream. That's an example of how, we have to continually be revolutionized in our own thoughts because yesterday's radical is today's conservative, so to speak, mm-hmm. right? And we have mm-hmm. to keep challenging that.
Okay. You bring up Jean Croder, who's the local MP from Nanaimo. Nanaimo South or North? I can't remember. Nanaimo South, I believe. Yeah. Duncan is where her office is. So she's the NDP First Nations critic.
Mm-hmm.
That's her place. And you recently met with her, or fairly recently?
Second, it was, in 2007?
February 2007, yeah.
Okay, so a little while back. And you were in Ottawa at her office there and saying, what are we going to do about this?
Well, we were having a meeting with Dennis Bevington, actually. And then when we showed up for the meeting, it turns out that she was going to, she just basically commandeered the meeting, and we didn't get a word in with Dennis, who sat there the whole time, but not a word. And she had it quite in control. She was in control of this meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was worried about the fact that I was... You see, the way it was is I was in Ottawa giving a talk. Dennis Bevington is a member of Parliament from the Yukon, and his secretary, who's native, was at our film showing and kind of made the link and got us together with him because I was trying to find a member of Parliament who would support a motion to have these missing children investigated. And she showed up and really steered the conversation away from that towards trying to make it look like, well, the NDP is doing a lot, we're really concerned. She said she wouldn't support such a motion until she had checked with the appropriate First Nations groups. And I said, well, what groups are those? And she wasn't really clear. She gave a very vague answer. She wouldn't say who they were, almost using that as an excuse to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's understandable the NDP would do that in a way because they have a long history connected to the United Church, which, you know, it was not only one of the main perpetrators of the residential schools, but they were closely tied to the experimental medical programs being done on Native kids in the Indian hospitals. People like Dr. George Darby, a United Church missionary who was sterilizing Native people up in Bella Bella for generations, tied into the MKUltra programs, providing children for these experiments. You know, the Catholic and the United Church were big time in this, and the NDP knows all that. They have members of Parliament who are United Church clergy. Jack Layton came out in the news a few months ago saying what a proud member of the United Church he was. Mm. These guys are not going to step on the toes of one of their friends, I guess. So clearly I think that's one of the reasons she was so down on what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as we said then, a couple months later, the Tories bring it up, but
yeah,
mm-hmm.
and at that time there was a bit of news kerfuffle then about, you know, an official working group linked to the TRC, though not directly part of the TRC, so linked to the TRC.
That's the Truth and Reconciliation Committee.
To look into the deaths of the children. And stuff that was getting leaked out of there at the time was incredible. I mean, you know, John Malloy, who's out of Trent University, is, you know, long time one of the government's chosen people to work, you know, work and spin this thing. I mean, here he is still maintaining that it was all accidental, and yet saying that there's graves with 3, 4, 5 children in them are very common, that there's gravesides unmarked at almost all of the schools, and so you're admitting all of it and yet saying you're still trying to maintain that it was an accident. Like, it's just total insanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My awakening to the NDP, this was quite a few years ago when Canada was deciding, well, pretending to decide if they were going to join the coalition of the willing, and you know, and take part in the American bombing whoever they want to bomb this year, and reading the transcript of what happened in Parliament during that discussion, and I saw no difference between, you know, the supposed peaceniks and, you know, the warmongers. You know, I mean, if we can, you know, say left and right is as simple as that, and I was so frustrated that there was no hint of reality in what they were saying. It was just jingoistic lies. Mm-hmm. And I was so frustrated, and I was emailing them all, and, you know, at that time I thought we had a bit of a democracy here, and, you know, you guys are misinformed. Well, no, they're not misinformed. They've got a plan, and their plan, in most cases, is to shut up.
I think it was the Prime Minister Louis Saint-Laurent, when he was referring to the CCF, the predecessor to the NDP, he called them liberals in a hurry. But I don't think they're in any hurry anymore. I think they're just liberals. So, I mean, that's also part of it.
Yeah, it's kind of a comfy niche with being always the third party there, right? Just they're never going to be the number one, so we're just comfy sitting back here being
that is
the,
your
the
position
other side.
To be in third place,
But do you think you could take a risk in that position? I mean, you never know you're going to form a government, so why not go for broke?
Right.
I mean, when Bev Collins, who is an NDP candidate up in northern B.C., she made a reference in her campaign to 9/11 being planned, and Jack Layton came out the same day and disassociated himself from her. Next day she turns around and contradicts herself and said, no, I was mistaken. 9/11, I accept the official version. I mean, that's the NDP position. They won't even let one of their candidates, not even a member of parliament, but one of their candidates, they won't even let them go into this stuff.
Or even have a public opinion. Like, it's interesting how everybody has to exactly toe the party line, and I just don't understand it. What's all the fear, right? Why can't we just have a discussion here, right?
Yeah, I guess discussion might lead to something.
Yeah.
You know, so let's just avoid that right there.
Just want to remind people of our website, too. www.hiddenfromhistory.org. And if people want to contact us, can we give out our home phone, honey? Or?
Yeah, you always do.
In Nanaimo, 753-3345. We're just up the hill on Fitzwilliam from the United Church, where now the new minister, Bert Ramsey, was one of the guys who had me defrocked. So just go by and pay a visit to Bert there.
Hi, Bert.
Say, hi, I'm here. I'm back and still here, Bert.
Right, yeah. So you got a friend in the neighborhood. Yeah. Now, both of these guests tonight are radio show hosts. Kevin with Hidden From History at CFRO, which is Co-op Radio in Vancouver, 102.7. The show is Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. And now you've been doing that many years, like 8 now, was that?
This is not our 9th year.
9 shows, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's a lot here. I've got 130 shows under my belt, and heck, you've got, 500 or so.
It must be close to that now.
Yeah,
wow.
I agree.
Yeah. Huh. Is there another show in Canada covering what you're covering?
No, not consistently.
Some of the topics, but not. Certainly not.
Not consistently focused on the whole thing of genocide. But, I mean, there's a lot of overlap, of course, because we're talking about the same beast. We're just approaching it from different angles.
You know? Okay. And, Lori, you're one of the newer members of the CHLY team. You're a programmer. You're a co-host with Amber on Altered Egos, and that's Saturday from 10 to noon. How's that going?
Yeah, great. It's really neat. I love working with Amber, and it's just interesting how we'll sort of be working on whatever we're working on. We come together, and it's like everything just kind of dovetails with each other, and off we go, right? It's quite good. Very okay. interesting, yeah.
Nice, nice. Now, Amber's been on the radio for a number of years as well.
Man, she's a whiz on the board. She's great.
Yeah. I'm looking for the computer button, and I don't know where it is. So you brought up a YouTube clip.
Yeah.
Why don't I just push a bunch of buttons and see
Give
if one
go.
Of them will,
Give it a go.
Will
this
come
is,
out.
And hope you don't go off the air.
So this is, yeah.
You can read the little info box there.
Let's do that. Okay, so Beryl Spencer describes the 1958 attack by staff at the Edmonton Indian Residential School, which is the United Church, which she survived, but which killed her 9-year-old sister, Vicky Stewart. Now, is that the school that they just tore down?
They tore down part of the Charles Kempsel Hospital, which was a facility that was run in part by the United Church and by the federal government, and that's where they're doing a lot of experiments, sterilizations, other kind of
okay.
sort of programs.
Yeah, but the Edmonton school it's down. We've been at the site. There's no
the school itself is yeah it's torn down. It's now called the Poundmaker Lodge, north of Edmonton. We've been there, and people have pointed out mass grave sites there to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. Well, let's play that, and when I find the right button, we'll start it properly.
So okay.
Right.
Good luck.
Okay, it's not that one. What else doesn't have? That's not it either.
This we actually played this at a press conference in May, late May in Vancouver. Invited 16 media, and only the province and Global News showed up, so I thought that was typical.
Okay. Oh, I got a phone caller. Hey, maybe someone's going to help me out. You will be on the air. Hi, caller. Welcome to the Unbought and Unbossed show.
Hey, Raymond. What's up, brother? It's Dylan.
Hey, Dylan. You going to help me out?
You got to turn the Winamp key on.
Winamp.
Is that on the screen?
The Winamp key.
On the desktop.
It's on the desktop.
Oh, on the desktop. Okay.
Okay, so that's on.
Okay, yeah, we have. Help me out again here. tell me that again.
Winamp Q. It's an icon on the desktop. Click on it. Open up the Winamp Q.
Okay. Yeah, I got it. And now what?
And then turn on the Winamp Q channel on the board, which is the second channel from the right on
yep.
the end.
I got it. Okay. And that should be able to run the computer?
Just press play, and it should work, hopefully. Make sure it's turned on, channel the Winamp Q channel on the board.
Residential school.
Okay, Dylan, you're the man.
Thanks, Dylan.
Thanks, brother.
No problem.
Bye-bye. Okay, very nice. So let me bring that back. It's a minute 35. It's fairly short. So I'm going to kill our volumes, and we'll put that show on.
Spencer, and I want to just let people know what happened to my sister Victoria Kathleen Stewart in Edmonton in 1958. She died there at the age of 9 because of the beating that happened. She was hit over the head with a 2x4 by one of the supervisors. And shortly after that, she started getting sick. And she ended up going to the Kempsel Hospital. This was very late in the evening. And then by next morning, they told us that she died. Miss Kaniski was the one that hit her on the head with a 2x4. We were running in from the yard, and just because we were running, that's why she hit her. First she got me in the back with a 2x4, and then she got Vicky over the head.
Did you say what school it was?
At the Edmonton Residential School.
Okay, there we are. Very nice. So the two of you interviewed this woman. Is that how this went down?
I interviewed her, and along with her sister Eliza and brother Moses. And Eliza and Moses were at the press conference where we played this tape. Burr lives up in Terrace, But, you know, I mean, this is one of many, many stories like this I've heard. Deliberate murder, homicide, police saying, well, we can't investigate. There's no evidence the person's dead. There's no statute of limitation on murder, and yet, like, they're acting that, that there is one.
Mm.
And
no, there's clearly a very different set of laws that, that that go, you know, that have anything to do with the crimes in the residential schools. I mean, like you said, I mean, the Globe and Mail has had, you know, front page 50% death rate. And, I mean, to this day, with all of the so-called lawsuits, I mean, the death of a single child has never entered a courtroom in Canada.
Mm.
And it won't be allowed to either.
It won't be allowed to.
Okay.
They just refuse to investigate this.
Mm.
It's...
Did I hear that there was a date you were throwing around while we were playing that? Is
well,
there something?
The government set up this bogus Truth and Reconciliation Commission. When you look at their mandate, they're not allowed to in do a criminal investigation. They can't lay charges. They can't. You're not allowed to name names even.
They can't compel evidence.
You know, if you're a person who saw a murder, you can't come on and say this person killed this person. You don't even have amnesty or immunity to do so, immunity from prosecution, so the church can go after you if you name names at these things. So, in other words, it's a big hoax. I mean, it's not an attempt to get at the truth. They can't even, they're not going to even criminally charge the churches. And that fact alone is a crime. I mean, you're obstructing justice when known killers are not allowed to be brought to justice. So the government and the police and the courts are involved in a huge obstruction of justice, and in any other regime, they would be held accountable for that, but, you know.
And do, I mean, go to the official website. This is the Canadian government official. I mean, the doublethink here is just incredible because they continue, like, incessantly to call it an independent body. How can it be? It is set up by the government and the churches.
Yeah.
In what way is it independent? That's ridiculous.
The church is a former moderator. Bill Phipps was one of the people who chose the commissioners.
Mm.
So this is like, you know, the serial killer choosing who's going to be on the jury.
Mm.
Then they put these handpicked government Indians in there who are going to be make these friendly reports.
Well,
the report
just,
is
going to
come out in 2014.
Mm.
Can you believe it?
It essentially doesn't matter who is sitting on the commission. If you will, okay, like I said, go to the official website. Go on to the left side. It says mandate. Click on it. Okay, where the meat is in section two, and then go through the subsections of section two, and it says you cannot name names. It doesn't matter how the commissioners may feel themselves. If they're bound by the mandate, they are not allowed to record any stories that might potentially point to criminal behavior. Well, what does that leave? You know, no names. You're not allowed to name an institution or an individual.
No mention of wrongdoing unless it's been before a court.
Now, all of these, not even unless it's been before a court, unless it's been proven in court. Mm. And what, you know, name me a number there. We're less than a handful here.
Well, okay. There's never been a case in Canada before a court about murder in a residential school, so that precludes any discussion of homicide.
It won't be in the report.
Yeah.
It's not allowed to be by the mandate.
So it's a whitewash. It'll be a whitewash.
Okay. Now, how is this similar or dissimilar to other Aboriginal or First Nation issues from other countries?
Well, like they always compare it to South Africa. It's not at all based on the South African Truth Commission, because there, the first thing they did is they identified that there were people whose testimonies they needed, and they granted them immunity so that the truth could come out. There's no immunity granted here at all, which means, you know, you cannot guarantee you're not going to have your ass sued if you start talking. So who's going to come forward and start talking if they know there's going to be a repercussion on them personally.
Mm-hmm.
And who is going to go after an institution when they've already been told that those institutions aren't going to be held criminally liable?
Well, they're sitting on the panel. I mean,
yeah. So there was analogy to this in Ireland where recently there was a 2,500 page report issued by the Irish government. They did a 4-year long study into the same thing, exactly the same kinds of crimes in Catholic orphanages and schools in Ireland. And the Catholic Church got on the commission 2 years ago and made sure that there would be no names mentioned, that there would be no criminal liability attached to the Catholic Church. When the truth of that came out, everyone hit the ceiling. The Irish went totally ballistic. There was 10,000 people protesting in the streets of Dublin, demanding justice. And they've even invited me to come over in November and speak to show the similarities between these how the Catholic Church basically, anywhere in the world, gets to control the process of their... you know, investigating their crimes that have spanned the centuries. And so the Irish are just very upset. Now I'm wondering, where's the 10,000-person demonstration here in Canada over this? Well, it hasn't happened because it's involving Indians. And they're non-people under the law. They're non-people in the consciousness of everyone, including the left, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is, I think, instructive to look at other countries for that reason.
Okay. What can we learn from AIM, the American Indian movement of the 60s and 70s? Is there any lessons that can be learned from there? Are there any parallels? Or what are the differences between the First Nations movements for freedom and equality versus the situation in Canada? Is that something we can go into?
Well, AIM is kind of different. I mean, the situations in Canada and the U.S. are very similar in terms of the genocide, but the reactions are different. AIM was targeted for extermination by the FBI through COINTELPRO, the same...
Just as the Black Panthers were, just
yeah,
as, same, I mean... Yeah.
The same program that killed Martin Luther King and a lot of Panthers. Over 60 AIM members were assassinated by the FBI over a period of 4 years. And there were permanent rifts created in AIM by provocateurs. I mean, you know, AIM now still has difficulty working together because there's two permanent factions, which were really created by the FBI. And, I mean, that's an example of how the state targets and is very paranoid of indigenous groups that stand outside the government-controlled Indians, like the Assembly of First Nations and the Band Council of Chiefs. Anyone who isn't part of that system is fair game. And we saw that at Gustavson Lake, where non-treaty Native people basically tried to protect. In 1995, they said, you cannot go on our sacred sites. You had a military operation by an NDP government aimed at, you know, these unarmed, basically women, children, and old guys. 77,000 rounds of automatic bulletry shot at them for doing nothing except defending their land. You know, that's how you treat Indians who get out of line. And I think it's a model for how anybody is going to treat if they get out of line.
Yeah, I mean, right now, Akwesasne is being held hostage, like the border crossing in Akwesasne there on the island. As of June 1st, all of the border crossing guards across Canada were suddenly going to be armed. And this particular border crossing is right in the middle of their community. And they're just saying, it's our land and you haven't negotiated. We do not want the guards to be armed. I mean, we're having daily brutality from these people in the first place. Like, having them armed is just uncalled for. I mean, and no single Canadian border guard has ever been shot at, so why are we arming them, right? So what the police did on the Canadian side of the bridge, and then the American police on the American side, so they've just cut this community off. People are getting to and from the island by boat. Supplies are being brought in and out by boat, but I mean it's a real shutdown. And then where is it in the news? It's not, you know.
It's
where
a military
this community.
I don't know where it is. Occupation of Mohawk land.
Cornwall Island.
Is Cornwall, Ontario.
Superior or
it's southeast corner of Ontario near Ottawa, kind of south of Ottawa.
Okay.
Cornwall. Yeah.
All right. I was going to ask if someone wanted to call in. We've got a couple of minutes left. If you would like to make a question or comment to Kevin and or Lori, the phone number is area code 250-740-1017. I say that because we got a couple of phone calls last time that
they were good.
Yeah,
you folks were in the show,
it.
And they were fantastic calls. So please do so if you would like. It can't be a long one, unfortunately, but so that would be nice.
And watch our film Unrepentant on our website, hiddenfromhistory.org. And give it to a member of the United Church or NDP.
There you go. Nice. Earlier, I was asking Lori about how it's coming with being on Altered Egos, and I didn't get a long enough answer. Can you tell me a little bit more? Do you have any radio background? Or?
Well, I was... Well, radio background. No, I mean, I was on... I was co-hosting with Devo a few years ago on the Lovecast.
That's how we met, actually. Okay. We met in this building.
It's true. I wasn't a co-host then. I was just coming down to talk to Doug Enquist, actually, at the time when he was here. I loved his show, Temporary Autonomous, at Autonomous Zone. That was so brilliant. So I was coming down looking to talk to him, and I went and walked into Kevin, and off we went, yes.
Okay, tell us a little bit about Altered Egos.
So Altered Egos... not overly structured. I mean, we're just trying to bring in, you know, like alternative news and trying to expose stuff and as it comes up. We're linking to local events and sort of talking around that. I mean, we looked at, you know, Empire Days, and we looked at the around the STV vote, when the vote came up for the referendum for that. And
so mostly local politics?
and national and international. I mean, we were looking at the whole war machine and links to all of this. Like we said, it's all, you know, different aspects of the same beast, right? It's coming down hard and fast, you know, the pharmaceutical links. So we were looking at the vaccines on the weekend and
I've been told by two people this last week that your last show, this last Saturday, I didn't get to hear it, and unfortunately, I'm not a regular listener to that show. I work during those times, and it's just one of those things.
Yeah.
But I was told it was an extremely emotional, powerful show, and it was damn fine radio. What happened? What did I miss? is there something specific that went down, or?
I don't know, just one of those things, right? It just happened.
Is that where you played the Mike Wallace thing?
We played the 60 Minutes 1979 broadcast, looking into the 1976 swine flu hype and how that was all engineered and how it was lethal for people taking the vaccines.
Yeah.
And I forget what the other topic was, because it was just like I said, I mean, Amber and I came together and we both discovered that, well, we've both got a lot on this, on the vaccines, on the other topic, and that's just how we really were able to look at it quite in depth that way, and it was a great show.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, excellent.
And Amber's good to work with. She loves to bring things to the table.
Yeah, it's a great amount of freedom to just bring what I want. I'm just wishing I had a bit more technical know-how to kind of, you know, this stuff I'd like to kind of put together a bit in the week beforehand, but I can't. I don't know how to do that yet.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never worked with anyone. You know, I've always had this going solo, and I can't quite imagine compromise. Well, I don't necessarily compromise, but, you know, sharing.
Yeah.
Sharing an hour with someone.
Yeah.
It would be a little bit difficult.
Well, it's neat. I mean, she's just finding, I mean, as you know, holding a show on your own, sometimes it's difficult to pull all you want together in time and whatever, but it's just an interesting energy to just be able to bounce off of one another and...
You know, by having a dialogue, I find, you know, dialogue is good because it makes you think about things that you wouldn't just sitting there by yourself. Somebody, you know, kind of tweets
by
interjecting conversation.
Yeah. New ideas,
yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, we'll have an interview with somebody on the phone and, you know, the main interview's happening and then it's like, well, nobody's addressing this point here, so dive in with that. And it's like, oh, yeah, right, yeah, good point.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, I did put out a call for... a call. I put out a call for a call, and we didn't quite get it, and this is the time that I was going to wrap up this interview.
Okay.
So I would like to thank you both, Kevin Annett.
Thank you, Ray.
And Lori O'Rourke.
Yeah.
Thanks, as always. Always fun to wrap up.
Well, thank you. I'm going to put on an audio piece, and I'll see you to the door.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so there we are, friends. You're listening to CHLY 101.7 FM in the Nanaimo. This is the Unbought and Unbossed Show. I am your host, Raymond Geisler, Junior. I'm not a true junior, but Pappy is in the studio. Oh, no, he's not. He's in the office area of the studio. So I'm going to put on a little bit of stuff and see my guests. Goodbye. So I'll see you real soon. Okay, friends. Bye-bye.
Tune in to Altered Egos, Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., only on CHLY 101.7 FM.
We say no to war. We say no to war.
Hey, very nice. That was the promo for Altered Egos. So there you go. That was half the Altered Ego team in the studio, just left. So very nice. I'm going to put on a quick audio piece here. And what do I have left for you in the second hour? I'm going to be reading two pieces. The Jonathan Kay write-up on after going to see Richard Gage. He's the architect and founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And Jonathan calls him the prophet extraordinaire. And then I'm going to be reading from Jim Mars. And the book title is Rule by Secrecy. The hidden history that connects the Trilateral Commission, the Freemasons, and the Great Pyramids. And what he does is this encompasses thousands of years. And, for example, part one is modern secret societies. And this is the list here. The Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Rockefellers, the Morgans, the Rothschilds, the Secrets of Money and the Federal Reserve, Empire Building, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, the Roundtables, Rhodes and Ruskin, Skull and Bones, the Tax-Exempt Foundations, and Alphabet Agencies. So that's just looking at the first part of the book, Modern Secret Societies, and it goes back many thousands of years, and I am actually going to be reading the last two pages of the book, and it's not giving away any too much, but I really like what he has to say, though, so we're going to get to that. And then, of course, Jonathan Kay has agreed to be on the show next week. He was originally supposed to be on this week, and so I want listeners to know what Jonathan Kay has been writing about, the 9/11 Truth Movement. And, yeah, so where we're going to go next is let us go to a little comedic piece here. It's called 9/11 Debunking for Dummies. It was put out by Steeper 33. That's the channel on YouTube. Doug in Edmonton sent me this one. Thank you. And, again, this is a bit of a funny piece. How to deal with those pesky 9/11 truthers. And how the hell do we make them go away? So have a little bit of fun with this. Then I'll be back with the Jonathan Kay article, the Jim Mars piece, and time allowing a couple pieces on this vaccination flu problem thing going on. And, again, I will be touching on that next week more in depth. Hopefully Wayne will come on the show and talk about what he's calling a false flag flu. So there we go. This is 9/11 Debunking for Dummies, and I'll see you shortly, friends.
Are you a patriotic American who's sick and tired of people asking stupid questions about 9/11? Do you consider yourself an unrecognized genius who needs to feel superior to others? Does your social life revolve around trolling internet forums? Then you too can become a 9/11 conspiracy debunker. Debunkers work from the basic premise that the official story of 9/11, the one given to us by the Bush administration before any investigation was done, is the only possible explanation of the attack, and that anyone who dares question that explanation is an insane moodbat so filled with venomous hatred and intolerance they become dangerous. Although we would like to have these so-called 9/11 truthers rounded up and exterminated, they are still technically protected by First Amendment laws. So for the meantime, the best we can do is spend every waking moment searching them out on the internet and then verbally assaulting, slandering, and intimidating these people into shutting up. But before you jump right in, there's a few easy ground rules to help make you a better debunker. First, you need to become a 9/11 expert. Just go to one of the many 9/11 debunking sources like ScrewLooseChange.com, 9/11Myths.com, or the Popular Mechanics book. Spend an hour or two browsing the contents. Congratulations, you are now a 9/11 expert and can debate anyone confident you know all there is to know about the attack. There are certain tactics you can use when debating a twofer in a public forum. First, act shocked that anyone would question such a sensitive topic, although the Bush administration has lied about everything from election fraud to the Iraq War to wiretapping and torture. Try to act outraged at the very suggestion that the Bush team could have lied about 9/11 too. Point out that their baseless accusations only hurt the 9/11 victims' families and embolden the terrorists. Next, look for the weakest point in their argument, or invent one, and blow it up as the central point of their evidence. Then knock it down like a straw man. You only have to point out the tiniest flaw to claim all of their information is wrong. Demand evidence and sources from the twofer to back up all of their claims. Remind them that any information found on the internet is most likely a wild rumor without any basis in fact. And then debunk their claims with evidence and sources that you found on the internet. As a general rule of thumb, any photographic evidence has obviously been photoshopped. Any witness testimony is flawed because in the confusion of the day, they obviously were panicked and could not remember clearly what was happening. And any official documents are obviously forgeries planted by truthers themselves. Remember to stay focused on small details. If they try to get you to look at the larger picture of the events of 9/11, just play dumb and act like it's too complicated to understand or has no relevance to support the conclusions. And never allow a twofer to confuse you with the facts. Remember, the truth is not determined by what evidence is proven, but rather what supports the official story. The twofers may refer to one of their leaders like Alex Jones, Dylan Avery, or Stephen Jones. But instead of addressing their research, simply attack the character of these people by calling them lying radicals who have no credibility. The only experts who have any credibility are the ones who work directly for the defense industry or companies that depend on government contracts, because they would have no obvious ulterior motive or political agenda. And at all costs, ignore David Ray Griffin. David Ray Griffin does not exist and is only a figment of the twofer's warped imagination. But if all else fails, just bombard them with childish names and venomous insults. There are many to choose from, like Moonbat, Kook, Liberal, Commie, Paranoid Wingnut, and so on. You can also associate them with unpopular groups like racists, anti-Semites, and child molesters. Continue these verbal assaults until the twofer lashes back in anger, thereby proving it was their rage and hatred that has clouded their judgment. Always remember the magic word that makes all their evidence disappear. Coincidence. Anything that cannot be explained away is merely a coincidence. For instance, the fact that Dick Cheney, the man who oversaw America's lack of military response on 9/11, also represented both the energy and defense interests who stood to make billions from a Middle East war. Coincidence. The plans to invade Afghanistan in October were ready for President Bush to sign into action 2 days before the attack. Coincidence. A pilot participating in the 2000 drill simulating an aircraft crashing into the Pentagon ended up being the pilot of Flight 77, which supposedly hit the Pentagon. Coincidence. Larry Silverstein knew he would have to pay millions of dollars in asbestos removal from the World Trade Center when he leased it 6 months before 9/11. But instead, he made billions from his insurance policy when those towers were destroyed. Coincidence. The fact that the company in charge of security for the World Trade Center, who ordered the bomb-sniffing patrol dogs removed from the towers 6 days before the attack, just happened to be run by President Bush's brother Marvin and his cousin Wirt Walker III. Coincidence. The fact that the FBI admits there is no hard evidence connecting Osama bin Laden to the 9/11 attack. Coincidence. In fact, of the dozens of amazing coincidences surrounding 9/11, none of them prove anything and should not be investigated. So in summary, here's an easy way to remember these tips. Become a 9/11 expert by studying debunking information for at least an hour or two. Look for the straw man or the weakest point in their evidence to knock down. Ignore evidence or testimony that contradicts the official story. Name call and antagonize them into an emotional response that will help discredit the twofer and their stupid theories. Remember, the goal is to discourage critical thinking and promote the herd mentality. Remain steadfast in the belief that questioning our leaders is an act of treason. Now get out there and rip those pinheaded moon bats a new one. Dick Cheney thanks you for your loyal service. Sponsored by Fox News, the only fair and balanced news source.
Okay, friends, hope you enjoyed that. That was 9/11 Debunking for Dummies. And I bet Jonathan Kay's been studying that playbook, eh? Well, we'll find out next week. Again, Jonathan Kay is the only journalist that I'm aware of who's been willing to write and talk about 9/11. And he's writing a book on the truthers. Apparently not necessarily on what the evidence is that their researchers and scholars have put together, but just us truthers, what makes us stand out. So that is going to be a fantastic read, and I'm looking forward to next week's interview. So let's get on to the campus community updates. Actually, I take it back, there's going to be the events update tonight. Okay, and who has that been brought to us by? Well, the fantastic folks at Edmonton 9/11 Truth, at Fraser Valley 9/11 Truth, and warcriminalsout.com. So thank you to those financial supporters of CHLY and this show, the Unbought and Unbossed Show. Very nice. Well, where are we going to go now? We're gonna hear from this Jonathan Kay. I want you to know what he's saying about us. And again, like I told you, this is one of the more fair articles. I'm pretty sure it was posted, or it was first published in the National Post, April 23rd, 2009. And the article is called "An Evening in Montreal with Richard Gage, 9/11 Truth Movement, Prophet Extraordinaire." Okay, see you later, John Lennon. That was "I Don't Want to Be a Soldier," and you know what? I don't want you to be a soldier. Let's get into this article now. Okay, 3 years ago, Richard Gage says, he was just a run-of-the-mill architect designing steel frame buildings for clients in the San Francisco area. However, in March 2006, that changed. While flipping through stations on his car radio, he caught an interview with David Ray Griffin, a retired philosophy and religion professor who calls the official account of the 9/11 attacks one big lie. Beginning that day, Gage became skeptical of the idea that people living in Afghan caves could possibly have brought down the World Trade Center. Spreading this skeptical point of view is now the man's full-time job. As radical as Gage's theory may sound to readers, it's surprisingly popular. The 9/11 Truth Movement, as it is now commonly called, has millions of adherents across the world. Many believe that the World Trade Center was destroyed on September 11 through controlled demolition set in motion by officials within America's own government and military. And then he talks about how popular that view is. He quotes the Scripps Howard poll in which 36% of the respondents said it was very likely or somewhat likely that the U.S. was in on the 9/11 plot. And then there's the Canadian poll, which suggested that 39 of the respondents either disagree or are unsure that Al-Qaeda was responsible for 9/11. Okay, so those are older ones. I'm curious what they are right today. I have a feeling those numbers are a lot higher. So what makes Gage stand out from the millions of student and young activists who comprise the bulk of the truth community is that he is an architect and a respectable-looking middle-aged one at that, complete with a suit and tie and a receding hairline. His group, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, even scored a booth at the upcoming American Institute of Architects conference from April 30th to May 3rd. That was in Washington, D.C. And it's very debatable that the majority of the truthers are students and young activists. I mostly disagree with that comment. So, carrying on. Last Saturday, I went to see Gage speak at the Montreal event, which was hosted by the 9/11 Truth Montreal group, along with about 150 others. And Kay says, not a bad crowd, given that it was a $10 cover charge and the fact that it was hockey night. So, as part of my research for a book I'm writing on the truther movement, I've gone to see a variety of events like this, but none of the speakers I've seen are as lucid as Gage. So I'll certainly be asking which people has Jonathan Kay go to see, speak and present. Okay, so here we are. Truthers are prone to rambling. Your average speaker at a 9/11 truth event, taking the podium with an overflowing sheath of internet printouts, might start his presentation on the mechanics of the 9/11 of the World Trade Center attacks, segue into a attacking George W. Bush's war crimes, and then veer into a lengthy inquisition on the 1995 Oklahoma bombing, before bringing the audience back to the Twin Towers. I disagree. That is not accurate reporting at all. I highly doubt that. However, not Gage. His singular focus, laboriously examined in a 527-slide PowerPoint presentation. In the sequence of events leading to the collapse of the World Trade Center buildings, Expertise is critical to the mission of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Gage says, we're building and technical professionals. We are not conspiracy theorists. Much of Gage's two-hour-plus presentation was dry and technical, including a long series of slides analyzing the chemical composition of the World Trade Center debris, an inquiry which is central to the claim that the Twin Towers were brought down from within by a particular type of iron oxide-based explosive. He's talking about thermite. But he also has plenty of videos embedded in his slides, and this is where the crowd came alive. In one particularly effective segment, he puts up photos of the localized fires that broke out in the lower floors of World Trade Center Building 7 hours before it collapsed. Now, keep in mind, a lot of people don't know about Building 7. Three skyscrapers came down that day. Seconds later, he shows footage of Beijing's Mandarin Oriental Hotel, which suffered an epic top-to-bottom conflagration in 2009, and of course it remained standing. And, well, every single high-rise building made of steel has remained standing after a fire. Never, ever has one come down. So that's a little add-on there. Okay. And it's a cinematic juxtaposition that plays to the truther's strongest card. Even architects and engineers who have never heard of Richard Gage will concede that they aren't quite sure why World Trade Center 7 fell. A fairly typical tube frame structure located about a football field away from World Trade Center 1. That it would be struck down by localized fires and random debris. Of course, the official story now says FEMA finally said that it was fires and fires alone that did that, and of course that's not one bit plausible at all. So, carrying on. As one would expect, it was a friendly crowd to begin with. Who else besides a committed truther, except possibly a journalist, or an exceptionally accommodating girlfriend, would spend their Saturday night in a community center auditorium listening to a man talk about thermite reactions and load factors? Before beginning his presentation, Gage polled the crowd on their views. Five people, including myself and my guest, said that they believed the official theory of 9/11. 10 others said that they were unsure. But everyone else, 90% of the crowd, said that the World Trade Center came down through controlled demolition. Okay, the presentation only made the balance of opinion in the room more lopsided. There were emotional gasps and shouts when some dramatic piece of evidence was displayed. A couple sitting behind me seemed particularly moved. Apparently they said, "How can these war criminals look at themselves in the mirror after what they've done?" one exclaimed, and she wasn't talking about Al-Qaeda. Even my own guest, a conservative-minded woman who normally laughs at this sort of thing. I'm not too sure what sort of thing. has there been anything else like this? I don't know. She seemed transfixed, falling silent at points where I expected she'd be eyeball rolling. So I'm certainly going to have to ask Jonathan Kay at what parts of Richard Gage's presentation was he rolling his eyes at. That will be a good question, I would say. So then, during the question and answer period, high passions caused the proceedings to turn somewhat nasty. When I took the mic and asked a question, the crowd began shouting me down. "Educate yourself," one audience member screamed after someone at the podium outed me as a National Post journalist. "Typical media bullshit," yelled another. On the other hand, I protested, at least I'd shown up in the first place, the only working mainstream journalist, to his knowledge, in the room. Well, I've been to quite a few of these events, and Jonathan Kay, you would be the first working journalist to be in any of those rooms, at least that would admit and write about what they saw. The rest of them just avoid it. They just don't talk about it, do they? So we're getting close to the ending, and he really concludes with some strong strong stuff here, so the best is yet to come here. So says Jonathan K., I hoped this would count for something. One of the truthers' biggest complaints is that they are ignored by mainstream media. You do sometimes see stray mentions of the movement in op-ed columns or on radio programs, but usually it's in the spirit of mockery or passing sarcasm. Well, in the case of corporate media, it is almost always, not usually, pretty much always, attacking the movement. And then Kay goes on to say, no major media outlet has done a truly comprehensive profile or investigation of the truther movement, which has led me to my book project in the first place. Now, the frustrating thing there is, why are you focusing on the truther movement as opposed to the evidence they're bringing up? One is far more important than the other, in my opinion. Carrying on. Even if you are, like me, part of the majority that believes the official story of 9/11, it's a mistake to ignore a movement as large and passionately championed as this one. Across North America, never mind Europe, millions of people have decided that the leaders of the free world are actually murderers, or at least in league with murderers, who'd wantonly slaughter thousands of their own citizens as a means to advance a geopolitical agenda. Isn't that something that should interest us? Absolutely it should. But I'm going to take issue with the idea that they have somehow decided that. Well, they have been reading their history. Not the textbook history that you get in school and on TV, but real history. There is a difference. And I guess eventually you do come to decide that TV reality is full of it. So I guess maybe I don't have a problem with decided, because yes, I decided that I was being lied to and I was going to get my information elsewhere. So of most of the people who are listening right now, I assume. Okay, this is the final piece. And the movement is attracting new recruits too. Once he'd finished his lengthy presentation last Saturday, Gage conducted a second poll of the room. This time, when he asked how many people supported the official theory, was the only hand raised. Shocked, I turned to my friend sitting beside me. Oh, Jonathan K., you lost your partner there, buddy. She's now a truther. Look out. So there we are. That's what Jonathan K. has to say about Richard Gage in Montreal. And very interesting stuff. And again, I say that this is by far the best piece that I have read coming from the mainstream corporate media in discussion of 9/11. So good for you. However, I strongly disagree with you, and I personally don't believe that you believe the official story. You seem like far too clever of a man to do that, but you have a role to do, and we'll find out more about it next week. I can't wait. Sincerely, I'm looking forward to that interview, as are many listeners. I've had a lot of excited listeners get a hold of me. Okay, so where are we going to go right now, which we are at 9:30, I'll let you know, and this is the Unbought and Unbossed show, and of course you're listening to CHLY. We're at 101.7 FM from downtown Nanaimo. Okay, we're going to move on to an audio clip here, and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to read from Jim Marr's Rule by Secrecy. And so this audio piece that we're going to hear first is from the National Vaccine Information Center. It was published June 17 last year. Visit Brass Check TV, and you can watch this as well. I'm sure it's on YouTube as well. But anyways, the main thing here is that pandemics are being put on the same level as terror threats. So if you're a flu-y kind of person, I guess they could treat you as if you were a terrorist, that, you know, you've got to be detained so the rest of the population doesn't get this this terrible flu, which was made in a laboratory. So that's pretty awkward, isn't it? But one of the things that we can't help but thinking is, as of yet, the truthers and the peace activists and the whistleblowers, they're not disappearing yet. And I said yet. And that's a pretty scary thought. So it seems as if the federal government is creating ways to deal with these truthers. Perhaps. I mean, it certainly seems that way to me. But I'll let you hear it from the official spokesperson from the government, whose job it is to relay this information to you. It is a seven-minute piece. The first couple minutes are kind of blah, blah, blah. But things get heated up at the end, and she starts telling you specifically this new legislation that if you are thought to, or if they say that you are contagious with this flu, you will be disappeared. Awfully frightening. And so that's what I'm going to leave you with. So, again, this comes to us from the National Vaccine Information Center. And then we'll get to Jim Mars after that. So you folks enjoy this, and we'll be back in about 7 or 8 minutes. All right.
My name is Barbara Lowe Fisher, and this is a vaccine commentary brought to you by the National Vaccine Information Center. Today I want to talk about swine flu, because every day we're being warned by doctors at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control to worry a lot about the new influenza A virus, which was first identified in Mexico in April 2009 and is being called the new swine flu. As of June 15th, the World Health Organization says that 76 countries have reported more than 35,000 cases, including 163 deaths. More than 100 of those deaths occurred in Mexico. We're being told that nearly 18,000 Americans have gotten sick, with about 5% being hospitalized and 45 dying. It looks like people who are in poor health to begin with are at greater risk of having complications and dying from the new swine flu, which has symptoms right now that are identical to regular influenza. Well, this is not very surprising, because people in poor health are always at greater risk of having complications and dying from infectious diseases. What a lot of people don't know is that, according to CDC, true type A or type B influenza only causes about 20% of all flu-like symptoms that people experience during any given flu season. 80% of all flu-like illness is not caused by type A or B strains of influenza, including those strains contained in annual flu shots. And vaccine-acquired immunity is temporary, while immunity gained after recovering from influenza is longer-lasting. The new type A H1N1 influenza that public health doctors say is making people sick around the world is an unusual combination of human, bird, and pig viruses. Nobody seems to know exactly how this new virus was created, or why it suddenly emerged in Mexico near a pig farm in mid-April, or if it will behave like past pandemic influenza viruses that caused 68,000 American deaths in 1957, and killed 34,000 Americans in 1968. Influenza pandemics usually start with mild symptoms and progress to more severe symptoms before populations acquire immunity to the virus and it dies out. The good news about the new swine flu going around is that there are signs people born before 1957 may be naturally protected and at lower risk of being infected. Why? Because those of us who recovered from influenza caused by similar influenza strains that circulated in past decades have long-lasting antibodies that help us resist infection. So the aging baby boomers have something to be happy about. But will health officials allow our children and grandchildren to get the same kind of natural, longer-lasting protective antibodies to type A and B influenza, including the new swine flu? It looks like few choices will be allowed. First, doctors in America have been insisting for the past few years that every child from 6 months to age 18 must get an annual flu shot. Second, there are now calls by U.S. health officials to give American children the first doses of experimental swine flu vaccines in the school setting. This is because the response by doctors at the World Health Organization, who immediately went into high gear within days of identifying the new swine flu virus emerging out of Mexico, declared a public health emergency. Now they have raised the pandemic flu fear alert to phase 6, which is the equivalent of the U.S. Homeland Security's code red warning of an imminent terrorist attack. Doctors at the CDC, who followed the lead of the World Health Organization, have done the same and are exercising unprecedented power that Congress handed over to them after September 11, 2001. Whenever the CDC now declares a public health emergency, that declaration allows the Food and Drug Administration to permit emergency use authorization for drug companies to fast-track creation of experimental drugs and vaccines that do not have to be tested as thoroughly as vaccines that go through the normal FDA licensing process. In this case, Congress responded to the public health emergency declaration by giving a group of drug companies $1 billion to fast-track experimental swine flu vaccines that may include whole live or killed or genetically engineered human and animal viruses, chemicals, and potentially reactive oral-based adjuvants that manipulate the immune system to boost the vaccine's potency. People who already have sensitive immune systems, such as those with allergy and autoimmune disorders, may be at special risk. In some states, like Massachusetts, public health doctors have persuaded legislators to pass pandemic influenza legislation that will allow state officials to enter homes and businesses without the consent of occupants, to investigate and quarantine individuals without their consent, to require licensed health care providers to give citizens vaccines, and to ban the free assembly of citizens in the state. It is, of course, important for pandemic influenza vaccines to be developed for voluntary use by citizens. But what does this declaration of a public health emergency in the U.S. mean for you and your family? It means that right now, you need to become educated about vaccination, influenza, vaccine risks, and the public health laws in your state. You need to find out what your rights and options are under new public health laws that may require you and your children to get vaccinated or be quarantined. Go to www.nbic.org and learn more. Register now to attend the 4th International Public Conference on Vaccination, October 2 through 4 this fall in Washington, D.C., and help organize in your state to protect your right to make voluntary vaccination choices. Call and write the state legislators you elected to make public health laws that govern you and your family. Make your voice heard. As Department of Homeland Security officials are declaring that any disease outbreak is a matter of homeland security. As Department of Defense officials are defining public demonstrations as, quote, low-level terrorism. As plans are being made to designate selected U.S. airports as quarantine centers through which all airplanes would be rerouted for passenger health inspection. And as fast-tracked experimental pandemic flu vaccines are being created to be given first to American children in schools, it is time for all of us, whether we are public health doctors addressing what we believe to be a true public health emergency, or whether we are ordinary citizens simply trying to protect our health and the health of our children. It is up to all of us to act in rational and responsible ways. Every pharmaceutical drug, including vaccines, carries a risk, and those risks are greater for some than others. In this time of fear, we can't let that fear take away our freedom to make voluntary health decisions. The human right to informed consent to medical risk-taking gives citizens the power to make sure that the cure is not more dangerous than the disease. Thank you.
Okay, there we are. A lot of interesting stuff in there. It kind of looks at a lot of different issues, a lot of different sides, and that's a lot of information. So there we are. And like I told you earlier, we're going to be looking more at the swine flu issue next week in the second half. I'm hoping Jonathan Kay will still be on. We're having kind of a hard time nailing down a date, and so we got another date, and hopefully that stays good. Right now we're going to move on to Jim Mars. He's one of my favorite authors. He's in one of his books, it says that he's the leading conspiracy author in America, and he writes on a lot of different subjects. Actually, my father right now is reading his latest book, the Rise of the Fourth Reich, And so it's kind of a retelling of World War II, for the most part following the money, which I really suggest if you want to learn a topic in history, is that's a fantastic way to do it, to follow the money and see where that goes. And what you're more than likely to find is that, yeah, at the top of the pyramid, it was indeed a conspiracy. Something nasty is being done that the rest of us are not in on. And, you know, so I'm not really ashamed of calling myself someone who looks at history with conspiratorial views or an angle. You know, I certainly think that that's an important thing, but I don't like to label myself, and so I hope I didn't just do that. But where I was going is that Jim Morris is considered one of the leading conspiratorial authors. And this comes to us from Rule by Secrecy. 2000 is the publishing date. It is a big seller. I've got the 28th edition. So it is well read. And I'm going to read from the concluding comments. So it kind of comes down to, you know, we don't know everything, but we know a lot. So I'll take it in from there. And he says, whatever the truth may be, we must be weary of leaders who attempt, whether by force, manipulation, or deceit, to move whole populations in directions they may not wish to go and might not be beneficial to all. We must acknowledge that while many leaders are not in government, they may control our lives far more than any petty bureaucrat because of the inordinate power they have over what we see and hear. In the past, wars and religion were successfully used to control mechanisms. Today, with nuclear weapons making large-scale wars unthinkable and organized religion on the wane, economics, that is, the power of money, has become the method of choice for control of the masses by the inner elite of the secret societies. The bad news is that most of what has been presented in this book is true. The good news is that you are reading this, which means the centuries-old plot to control human destiny has not yet achieved total success, though the warning signs are everywhere. From the viewpoint of 1948, author George Orwell described a picture of the future as a boot stomping on a human face forever. Is this to be our future? As we enter the third millennium, new thoughts, new ideas, and new knowledge seem to be pushing us forward at an ever-increasing pace. We find our worldview and mindset constantly evolving into whole new patterns of understanding in what are obviously extraordinary times. So this book is a decade old, so a tiny bit dated. Maybe a lot bit dated, you know, because we had 9/11 happen close to 10 years ago as well. So in the first few months of 1999, a national television audience was presented a variety of programming devoted to government conspiracies, UFOs, alien contact, new rooms and tunnels discovered within the Great Pyramid, and the distinct possibility of a prehistorical, highly advanced civilization on Earth with the premise of more revelations to come. Many of us looked the other way, hoping we don't have to deal with the mind-expanding questions that new knowledge brings. We avoid these TV shows and books which are liable to upset our traditional mindset. But it's no use. We hear about them in office conversations, radio talk shows, and even occasionally as brief pieces in the mainstream media. The discussions of topics which once were prohibited are now commonplace. So, what's to be done in this era of spiritual poverty in the midst of material wealth? That's a hell of a question. An era of spiritual poverty and material wealth. So Jim Morris says, knowledge is indeed power. It is time for those who desire true freedom to exert themselves. to fight back against the forces who desire domination through fear and disunity. This does not have to involve violence. It can be done in small, simple ways, like not financing that new SUV, cutting up all but one credit card, not opting for a second mortgage, turning off that TV sitcom for a good book, asking questions and speaking out in church or synagogue, attending school board and city council meetings, voting for a candidate who has the least amount of money, learning about the fully informed jury movement and using it when called. In general, taking responsibility for one's own actions. Despite the omnipresent advertising of the lottery, there is no free lunch. Giving up one's individual power for the hope of comfort and security has proven to lead only to tyranny. It is time for truth about our past and present, about who really rules, and about what's being done to this planet in the name of progress and profit. Love your country so much that you will look past the jingoism and sound bites to starkly view the fear-inspiring deprivations and corruption within the national government and oligarchy. Such truth must be made available to everyone, not just to the manipulative elites and the secret societies. The time for secrecy is at an end. Don't wait for the corporate-controlled media to inform and explain. Read and listen to everything within reach and search for sources of alternative information on the Internet, in documentaries, in old library books, and unconventional bookstores. Read and watch things you normally wouldn't. Then, quietly contemplate. Use that God-given supercomputer called your brain. Perhaps more important, feel what's right within your heart, your soul, your innermost being. And remember, there remains one last great secret. This one is within the hands of the general public, namely, that there are more of us than there are of them, and we keep gaining knowledge daily. This knowledge comes from individual initiative, not from government committees or the so-called experts. If one truly desires to be free, then must first be the... If one truly desires to be free, there must first be a search for truth. Without the aid of paid experts, academic snobs, media pundits, clerics, gurus, or government leaders, all of whom have their own agenda to press. True innovators, like Thomas Edison, Alexander Graham Bell, and Bill Gates, did not conform their thinking to conventional wisdom. Like these men, and many more like them, each individual makes his or her own destiny. We are creative beings and would like to create the best possible world for ourselves. But this is impossible when the creative process is based on incomplete or erroneous information designed to instill fear. There are more people today who sincerely desire peace and brotherly love than ever before. Unfortunately, those who strive for power and control usually achieve it, and they want to keep it. But the time for brute force has passed. Today, they can control the 6 billion members of the human community through only deceit and secrecy. Once you have found your own heartfelt truth, that truth must be shared, so as to lift the curtain of secrecy, which contributes to the ignorance, fear, and confusion of our time, and create a new spirit of human tolerance and togetherness. There we are, Jim Mars. So, what's he talking about there? He's talking about informing yourself and doing what you know is right, and you're going to find that inside yourself. You're not going to find it from any one person. So there you go. I do indeed recommend Jim Morris. He's got a lot of work out there. I've read much of it, and I'm quite impressed. I'm not saying that everything he says is true and correct. Of course not. That's not possible. But he's one of the people that I value his input, and I consider what he writes, what his opinions are through his research, and it makes up my current belief system, I guess. And so there it is, jimmars.com, I believe, is his web address. Well, we're at 9:52 right now, and this is the Unbought and Unbossed show on CHLY. So we're running out of time here. So, unfortunately, I'm not going to get to this Australian vlogger who has consolidated Jane Burgermeister, the Austrian investigative journalist, whose immense documents this chap has consolidated into a 20-minute vlog, which you can find on YouTube. And so I'll hopefully be playing that next week. Not 100% sure. So where do we want to go? I have a short audio piece on a Japanese company that has produced a car that runs on water. Yes, indeed. I played a piece not too long ago about a car that runs on compressed air. There are a lot of solutions out there. And the ones being offered to us by the government and the corporations that they work for, well, they're not in the best interest of the majority of us. It is primarily just short-term profit and screw long-term anything, it seems. You know, that's one of the truths that I've come to. I can't think of anything really good right now. It seems to be kind of doom and gloom no matter what situation you look at, and that's unfortunate, but let's hope that that's not to be our future. Let's work really hard to make sure that it is not our future. That is what I would like to say. So why don't I play you that short? And this comes from Reuters news agency, which is not much better than most, but apparently they were the only one to cover this Japanese company and this water powered car. Then I've got a lot of other little short pieces here. How many am I going to get to? I've got a Henry Rollins piece. I've got a clip from the network movie of 1976. I've got a comedy piece, Top 10 Signs Your Country May Be Going Fascist. Anyways, we'll see what we get to. I want to thank you for tuning in and listening. If you want to contact me, you can do so. I'll give you my email address. It is RaymondTruthRadio@hotmail.com. That's RaymondTruthRadio@hotmail.com. Let me know what your thoughts are. If you got an idea for a topic to come on, or you want to be on the show, whatever it is. The other thing I do is I archive my shows, so people outside of this relatively small listening base of CHLY, they can listen to them. And I also tell you, what was on, and I give you links to various websites to, further your research on the things that I've brought up. So you can visit my website at Unbossed, that's UNBOSSED, unbossed.livejournal.com, unbossed.livejournal.com. Okay, very nice. So what did I say I was going to do? The Japanese car, I think, is what I said. So let's do that, and that's going to do it for this week, friends. Be well out there, and again, next week, big show. Jonathan Kay will, I certainly hope, be on the show. That is going to be fantastic. He, again, is the only journalist to be remotely fair to the 9/11 Truth Movement, and he's writing a book on us. Yes, indeed. So that will be a fantastic show, and again, the only person that's ever come on the show that claims to believe the official story of 9/11, so that's pretty historic as well. So that's a brave fellow, that Jonathan Kay, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he has to say next week. Okay, friends, I hope you can make it, and that's going to do it for tonight. Be well out there.
With oil prices soaring and fuel protests spreading across the globe, it almost sounds too good to be true. A car that runs on nothing but water. And all kinds of water will do. River, rain or sea, they all make this car mobile. Even tea works. Japanese company Genpax unveiled the eco-friendly vehicle in Osaka. Once water is poured into the car's tank, an energy generator takes hydrogen from the water, releasing electrons that power the car.
The main characteristic of this car is that no external input is needed. The car will continue to run for as long as you have a bottle of water inside for you to add from time to time.
According to Genpax, a liter of water will keep the car running at a speed of 80 kilometers for around an hour. The company hopes to go into mass production with a Japanese manufacturer. With car users around the world looking for alternative fuels to power their vehicles, Genpax may well have the solution they've been looking for. Michelle Kalalal-Khoury, Reuters.